RM stand.
Okay.
You're on the air now.
Okay,
where great. Are you?
I'm on the corner of Olympic and Broadway right now. Just about a couple of, I'm about 50 feet away from the truck where the rally's going on. And there are a ton of signs that I see out here. There's one that says Flower Power. There's one that's trying to recruit Al Gore to run for president. I see a number of Stop the War and a number of AnswerLA.org posters. And I've got a gentleman right here who's got a sign that says Fight the Power.
Fight
and he's
power.
Also he's also one of the people who's campaigning for presidential hopeful Ron Paul, and he's got some really nice thoughts. I was wondering if we could share that with you. Can I have your name, please, sir?
My name is Christopher.
Oh, Christopher, where are you from?
I live in Hollywood, California.
Fantastic. And what do you see? How do you feel about what's going on right here right now?
Well, the reason that we're here today is for the Stop the War, anti-war rally. And the reason I'm out here is because the only presidential candidate that I see that has constantly campaigned on the platform of bring the troops home now and end this war is Ron Paul.
And what is it that you see differently about Ron Paul?
If you look back at his consistent voting record and his honesty that's been prevalent in every decision he's made.
So basically what you're going to do is you're going to pretty much vote with your conscience here.
Yes, I actually registered as a Republican just to vote for Ron Paul in this.
Okay. And were you, what party were you with previously?
I was registered independent.
Independent? Okay. So it looks as if we've got some people of all ideologies here, not just conservative, but people who really want to make a change. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to be walking around Bennett, and I'll be seeing if I can find some more people. We'll get some more viewpoints.
That's great, James. Keep us informed.
I will do that.
Okay.
Okay, see you in a bit.
All right.
We should be hearing from Derek, from the people who do that shortly as well. We're going to go back to Groucho and Lord Buckley here. You're listening to Kill Radio in Los Angeles.
Sounding silence. There's a lot of pickle fanciers in the audience. And you are Mr. R.M. Buckley, huh?
That's right, sir.
What does the R.M. stand for, Mr. Buckley?
Richard Merle.
Richard, well, that's a fine name.
You're right, sir.
Great dignity.
Thank you.
Where is your hometown, Monsieur Buckley?
I was born in Tuolumne, California, Groucho. It's a little tiny town up above Sonora, California. Then I went down to Stockton and finished my schooling there. Then
well, Mr. Buckley, that Mr. sounds pretty formal. What do your friends usually call you?
Well, my friends usually call me Lord Buckley.
Lord Buckley? How'd you get to be a lord? Are you a wrestler?
Well, no, sir. You see, that's a philosophy of mine, that I claim that all ladies and gentlemen are lords and ladies. Were it not to be so in calculi, the king and queen could not sit their throne. For it's very obvious that the Empire State Building can't be built on the frog patch, and if the sphere swings, the first five floors must have the ruby windows.
You know, all I asked him was what his name was. I'd ask you to repeat that, but I'm afraid the second time you might say it the same way you did the first time. Now, is there a Lady Buckley stashed away in a castle someplace?
Oh, yes, my
behind
Lady
a
Buckley.
Moat?
Yes. No, she's in the castle. She's tucked very beautifully in the castle. Lady Buckley's a very exquisite, charming, gracious, talented lady.
Is she built on a frog pond, too?
No, sir, she...
I'm sure she's a lady, Mr. Buckley, and I respect you for speaking so well of her. How did you acquire this smooth way with women?
I've been married 6 times.
Well, if you'd have learned anything, you wouldn't have gotten married the second time. 6 times you've been married?
Yes, sir.
Well, are you planning on fighting any more preliminaries, or is this current one the main bout?
No, I've been married for 10 years, so I have a divine young boy, 4 years old, and little girl, 5.
You see. The other 5 went rather rapidly, didn't they?
Can't quite say, yes.
Over the dam in no time.
High rhythm.
Have you ever been in vaudeville? You have a very familiar look about you.
Yes, sir. I toured vaudeville for quite some time, sir.
I suspected this.
Thank you.
Well, what kind of a racket are you in now?
Well, at the moment, sir, I'm working for a magazine called Dig.
Dig?
Yes, sir.
D.I.G.?
Yes, sir.
Just what is this rag?
Well, I've been translating. I'm a professor of hippology, sir.
Oh.
Yes, I've been translating the work of the old masters, such as Poe, Shakespeare, Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln just translated his address recently. Shakespeare's very interesting in hip. It has a renewal power, a tremendous sense of renewal. Henry Miller calls it an international language because it takes the old masters and brings them up to the very instant of today and over the fence of now and on the pad of the Vance.
I hear a lot of people applauding. If there's anybody in the audience that understands that, will you stand up and explain it to me?
Well,
are you going to stand there and tell me Shakespeare could have written his works better in jive talk?
Yes, sir. Are you familiar with Shakespeare's funeral oration?
But I was very familiar with a girl in one of Shakespeare's company at one time.
Good translation for you.
Well, I certainly wish you would. And give us an example.
I could do an inch and a half of The Friends of Roman's Countrymen.
I would love it.
And hip, it blows this way. It says, "Hipsters, flipsters, and finger... pop in, daddies, knock me your lobes."
That means give me your ears, I presume.
"I came here to lay Caesar out, not to hip you to him."
He's got Elvis Presley in here, too.
"The bad jazz that a cat blows wails long after he's cut out."
You said a hatful there, Lord.
"Groovy."
Just a moment now. Shh.
"The groovy is often stashed with their frames, so don't put Caesar down."
That's wonderful. That's wonderful, Lord. All I can say is that it's a good thing that Shakespeare's dead. And if he'd been alive to hear it, that would have killed him. No, that was very clever. It's very difficult to do what you did. Well, you're an extremely quaint couple, even for our show.
Thank you, sir.
And you look like a very wealthy and successful confidence man.
Thank you.
And I wouldn't be at all surprised if somewhere in the back you have a suitcase full of counterfeit money.
Oh, sir, I beg of you.
I'm sure you'd like to win some real money, wouldn't you, Lord?
That would be delightful.
That would be a change from what you've been handling. I presume you both understand how we play You Bet Your Life?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, let's try it. You selected popular music of the last 20 years, and you used to be in vaudeville. This ought to be a cinch for you. Now, one answer between you and get together. Get four in a row right, and you win $1,000. Miss two in a row, and you're through. Jack Meekum will play the tune. You tell me the name of the song. Here we go. What is it?
"You Made Me Love
That's
You."
That's right. You're absolutely right. Tell him, George.
You're on the right track. Three more right and you'll have $1,000.
Oh, boy.
What is this track you're talking about? Is this a train you're referring to?
A figure of speech.
Oh, I see. Well, that's a figure of speech. There's the train. All right, here we go. This one's a familiar tune. Name it. What is
tisket
it? Tisket a tasket. You said it, kid. Tisket a tasket.
You're halfway there now. Two more right, and you'll have $1,000.
Can you sing that, Mr. Black?
A tisket, a tasket, a brown and yellow basket. Baba ju ja ja ba boom ja ja ja.
He's just a tall Louis Armstrong, actually.
Elvis Presley.
Thank you.
Not so old either. He's had six wives, don't forget. All right, what is this one?
"The Lucky Lady, the baby from Shady Lane."
That's close enough. That's close enough. It's the Naughty Lady.
Naughty Lady from
Naughty Lady of Shady Lane. You're very lucky that you got this man here to help you out. Here. All right, here we go for the big one now. Tell me the name of this one.
"Autumn in New York."
That's right. "Autumn in New York" is right, and you win the money. All right, you won $1,000. You can keep it and quit, or else you can go for $2,000 at the end of the show. If you try for the $2,000 and miss, you wind up with $500 for the both of you. Now go over and sit down and think about it. And it's a lot of money. You make your decision. You bet your life.
That was Lord Buckley with Groucho Marx on the Groucho Marx Show in 1956. That was You Bet Your Life. And we're still waiting for phone calls here. It's 12:33 on Kill Radio. So, Jake, you're here, too.
I am here.
Let me get you on a mic. Which, give me a test.
Test, 1, 2, 3.
You're on number 3.
And okay. We're working, Bennett.
So, are you a person who's ever participated in protest rallies?
I have. I've done some naughty things in some protest rallies that have erupted into some riots.
Have you been to jail?
I've been arrested but not jailed.
Good for you.
Yeah. Back in an anti-Klan rally in about 1991.
An anti-Klan rally?
Yeah.
Where was this?
This was in Denver, Colorado. The Ku Klux Klan was staging a rally on the Capitol steps back when the white supremacist movement and the Patriot movement was at its maximum. This is when the militias were everywhere. And right before the culmination in it, which was the Oklahoma City bombing. Because the militias, I mean, this was the time when we had a very right-wing presidency under George Bush, Herbert Walker Bush. And the resistance to it was the right-wing militias. So we have a phone call.
This is Kill Radio. Okay, I'm bringing you up on the board, James.
Okay.
So what's happening out there?
Oh, great. I have someone here from the march, because we have a number of people who have signs, and a number of people, like myself, we have flyers to pass out. There's one here, Veterans for Peace, that I am, there we go. I have one from Veterans for Peace, and I've got Kathleen, who's got an event coming up on November 3rd, and I was wondering if we could spend a couple of times to talk about it. Kathleen, you're with Veterans for Peace, correct?
Okay.
And could you please tell us about this event that you have coming up here?
Hi. Yes, we have a couple events going on November 3rd and 4th. Colonel Ann Wright and David Swanson will be at the Church in Ocean Park at 7 p.m. on November 3rd. That's 235 Hill Street in Santa Monica. There's a $10 donation, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. Colonel Ann Wright is a former U.S. diplomat and 29-year Army veteran who resigned the day we started bombing Iraq. And she's going to be speaking there also. Earlier in the day at 757 Palms Boulevard, there is a tea being served where Ann Wright will be, and that fundraiser goes for Swan Service Women's Action Network, which is a new support group for women veterans, and the former one at the Church in Ocean Park, all the monies will go to Iraq Veterans Against the War. So we hope that people will come and listen to what Ann Wright and David Swanson have to say. Ann Wright has been all over the world serving in the U.S. Army and has a lot to talk about dissent and conscience. And also Ann Wright will be down at Arlington West on November 4th at 11 a.m. speaking. And along with her will be the journalist for Meeting Resistance, a new film that's come out interviewing the resistance in Iraq, people that actually are taking part in the resistance. This is an incredible film that will be showing on November 2nd at the Lemley Fairfax. And you can check on meetingresistance.org for more information about other locations and dates. Any other questions? Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. James gave you to me. Okay. That was fantastic. What do you think is happening today? Do you think it's going to make any difference today?
Well, I think it brings people together to re-energize people, to network. and we've just got to keep the movement going, and then all of us go out and we individually speak with other people and encourage them to come out in any way they can to speak up, speak out, and call their congresspeople, their senators, and write letters. Take part in the moratorium every third Friday. It's so important. Also, we need volunteers down at Arlington West, which is a great place to find people other than the choir. And we're there every Sunday at Santa Monica on the north side of Santa Monica Pier. And if you can come down even for an hour once a month, we need you, because there's military people coming down, there's family members coming down who have had people that have been killed that they knew, or their sons, daughters, or other troop members, GIs. So it's a wonderful way to support the soldiers. It's also a wonderful way to express and look at the cost of war and to help meet the needs of returning vets.
Absolutely.
And to network them with people that also have opposing views to the war.
I think that's fantastic. It breaks my heart to think about that.
Absolutely.
What is nice today is to see the rays of action again.
Having a hard time hearing you. Sorry.
I'm sorry. No problem. Just the fact that we're getting back together and having the protest today is a good thing.
Right.
I wish it were happening everywhere in the country. We have listeners who are in Arizona who have complained that there's nothing happening there. So this is the kind of thing that we can do to inspire our friends.
Absolutely. And I would bet that in the hearts of Arizonians, there is also some dissent going on there. And hopefully people will speak up. I know that all over this country. I know there's a radio station, a little tiny radio station in Kansas City, Missouri. So to me, that's very positive.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for being there. I appreciate Kill Radio and all that you do.
Okay.
All right.
We'll take it back from here. Thank you, and talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, Jake?
Yes, Bennett.
I better turn your mic back up.
You said
that you almost got arrested at a Klan anti-Klan rally?
Yeah.
Now, did the Klan get permission to do the rally?
Yeah, they had permission to do the rally. They would oftentimes do these rallies on, like, Martin Luther King Day, which was a real slap in the face. The police fired rubber bullets into the crowd and nearly hit an infant. And, of course, at that point, all hell broke loose. We were there with the support of, at that time, the Nation of Islam, oddly enough. Was supporting some anarchist organizations and the Maoist International Movement, which I was not in an improvement with. And all hell broke loose. We saw little old women rioting. We saw Maoists rioting. We saw anarchists. And I was part of a group of people that overturned a police car. We smashed in the windows and tried to set it on fire. And it got on camera at that time. This was a time before people wore bandanas and sunglasses, and we knew all the precautions to take, because this was before there were video cameras all over the streets, and before police had cameras out in the crowds, and before there were cell phones taking pictures of everybody. So they were different times. We didn't live in quite the police state that we live in today, so you could get away with a lot more at that time. But somebody had identified me, who was a skinhead there, because I was well known. I actually had a price put on my head by the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan at the time, and a person who I later had a confrontation with at a Denny's in Wyoming when they tried to do this. And his bodyguard pulled a gun on me. So these were really, really weird times. You know, there were times when I'd go outside and there were neo-Nazi skinheads sitting on my pickup truck, you know, and they were armed with a Gat, and they'd have it, you know, in their flight jackets. I don't think people today realize what it was like living in a place like Colorado or South Beach or some of these other places where the white supremacist movement was quite in the place that it was back then, because it's not like that today.
No, we are covered with more with camcorders. Everything you do You're being watched.
You're being watched today.
And not just by the government, but you're being watched.
By your fellow peoples.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
They can seize the cell phones and everything else and take the documentation that, you know, your girlfriend might be taking of you at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So
there are ways to tap into those things.
Yeah.
Especially once they touch the line. Well, what do you think about protests like the one that we're covering today?
I think it's an excellent thing. I hope that it actually gets something done. I'm not sure that you can actually stop the military machine at this point.
Well, we are dealing with an administration that is determinedly not listening to the people.
Right. Exactly. And I don't know how much the people are up in arms. I know the people that are opposed to this war, but I don't know how willing they are to try to prevent this war. I know that the fastest way of turning a person into a leftist is to send their son or daughter home in a body bag. I've seen that happen more and more and more. The people that are very pro-war because their child is overseas, they're fighting a war, and they're very upset with protesters. I've seen them the next week or month or a year later, ending up as a veteran against the war parent because their child has come home, you know, in a coffin. So,
and suddenly the question of what we're doing there becomes relevant.
It becomes relevant. And that's what happened in the 1960s and the 1970s when there was a draft, because suddenly your ass was on the line. And right now college students and high school students, their asses aren't on the line. So this doesn't mean anything to them.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And that's what things like Kill Radio are for, so that we can actually hit people where they're not used to thinking.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I have met people, I've hit on girls at parties and stuff in like the inner city or something like that, young women that are not going to college, that are waitressing and such, that have brothers and sisters that are at war, or have had friends that have gone to war that are not in the system where they're actually going to go to college and get an education. And so one of the alternatives is to go join the military. And those are the people that are affected by this war.
Yes.
It's not usually people that are, you know, at the university level that are getting a higher education.
More than half of the dead and wounded, and the wounded are the huge numbers. The dead, fortunately, are still a low number, but the wounded are almost at 100,000 now.
It's massive.
Americans.
These people would have been casualties.
And more than half are under 25.
Right. And these people would have been casualties in the 60s and 70s. We have so much better health care, and we have much better surgical techniques today and much better technologies that we can actually revive these people, whereas in the 60s and 70s, these people would have ended up dead.
Just coming in this morning, I was talking with a homeless guy in the alley, this guy named Kevin. Nice guy. He's a NAM vet, and he'd stepped on a claymore when he was over in Vietnam. He survived, and now he's a homeless man living in an alley in Los Angeles, getting help from the VA whenever he can. But I think about that all the time, the fact that these guys who get their legs blown off today would have died 30 years ago.
Or with the gastrointestinal blowouts they get that would have killed them before. You know, these bomb attacks that actually rip your intestines and such out, these people would have been dead on the table, DOA, but they're not anymore. They can revive these people, and then they got the colostomy bags or they've got serious brain damage and everything else like that.
Hey, the guys without legs are out jogging with George Bush every morning.
Right, exactly. No, and I think we're going to see a surge in the homeless populations of Iraq war veterans, you know, in the upcoming years. Right now we're not seeing it because they're all in these hospitals, or they're squandered away right now, or they're being forced into extra tours, because that's the real draft, is that we keep forcing these people to enlist over and over and over and over and over again against their will. I mean,
well, and we're taking we're putting people into combat who 30 years ago, 40 years ago, weren't in combat.
We're putting National Guardsmen that are in their 30s and 40s back into
GW was in the National Guard to avoid going to Vietnam.
Exactly.
If it were today, he would be in Iraq.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're forcing people into these extra tours and these lengthened tours and everything else like that. And so we're not seeing these populations of people coming back that are finding themselves without jobs yet.
But you're right. In a few years, we will.
Yes.
And part of that, I mean, I remember about 2-3 years ago around the Los Angeles Mental Health Clinic that's over on La Mirada, there was a homeless man living in the street. He was covered in sores. He lived in his own filth. But he was a veteran. So therefore, the L.A. mental health community couldn't help him. The county couldn't help him because he was ex-military, which means that he was VA.
VA only.
And occasionally, someone would call the police and they would come and take him downtown. He would shower. And as soon as they released him, he would come right back to where he had been. He lived on that street for 18 months till finally the VA took him away. And he's been gone, but God knows where he is. I mean, I don't know where he is. But that's what I see all the time. I worry about the future for these people. I don't know.
I think it's bleak because I keep hearing stories about these National Guardsmen and such that, you know, their jobs have been terminated because they've been over there on tour for a very, very, very long time.
So there's no job to come home to.
And their wives or husbands, they leave them, or and they lose their children as a result of this. There are other casualties outside of the wounds and such that people receive. They're losing their lives. They have back home. They're coming home to nothing. And I think it's a very sad. I think that the movie, The Valley of Ella. I don't know. Did you see that?
I've not seen it. No.
No. I think it deals with that a lot because we're training these people to be killers, and they're seeing a lot of horrific warfare that's very different than what people saw in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different war with very different. It's a very different kind of enemy over there. And they're coming back and they don't know how to live again. They don't know how to live in normal society again. And this is going to be very difficult in the next few years to see how we re-enter these people into society. And we turn off all the training and the experiences and the post-traumatic stress syndrome and everything else that they've been through.
Mr. Bush asked for what? Another $120 million or billion?
Billion dollars.
$120 billion.
And we keep giving it to him.
Congress are wimps. And
they keep giving him these free tickets, and they will not cut off the money. That's the way to do this, is cut off the money, but they're afraid of their reelection.
Well, the war is not even included in the budget, and it's going to be $2 trillion before it's done.
Yes.
Maybe more.
Absolutely.
And I don't know. As soon as I start talking like that, I feel helpless. I feel hopeless and helpless when it comes to it.
And there's another war. There's the war in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And people keep forgetting about that, which has very similar problems. I mean, there's a resurgence of the Taliban. There's this huge influx of opium that is coming from that. It is now superseded Myanmar as being the highest producer of opium in the world, and it's under American military occupation.
And I can't help but think that back in May 2001, before September 11th, we gave the Taliban
a huge amount of money,
$52 million, I think,
yes,
because they were repressing the poppy fields.
Right.
You know, they were stopping the poppy growths.
And of course, all of Al Qaeda is basically in Western and Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was Pakistan and Saudi Arabia that attacked us, but we're not at war with those countries. And there's a saber rattling against the Persian Empire right now, which is a war that we do not want to have.
I don't know why I'm being optimistic. I don't think that it's going to happen in Iran. I don't think it is, but
it can't happen in Iran because these are tens of millions of people, all of whom have one religion that unites them. I mean, this is a Shiite empire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some scattered Zoroastrian and some scattered Jewish populations, but for the most part, this is one united cultural entity. It is not like Iraq, where you can divide and conquer like we're doing now,
mm-hmm,
with the Shiites and the Sunnis and the Kurds and the Yazidis and everybody else like that. This is a completely different story. And it's not like Afghanistan with all these different tribal factions that are living in the mountains and such, and the Taliban and all these warlord factions that you can, again, divide and conquer. You can play them against each other.
Well, 70%.
Persia is different.
70% of Persia are literate.
Yes.
Yeah. We're not dealing with stupid people.
Not at all.
And there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they've got allies.
Yeah.
And Russia is one of them.
That's so interesting. But then Russia should be so pissed off at us after all the shit we pulled on them, starting the Afghan war.
Yes.
Pushing them to do things.
And playing their client, these satellite states against them, like Georgia and Turkmenistan and Tajikistan and Uzbekistan. I mean, basically, we've encircled them with our military at this point. I mean, we've played these essential coup d'etats with these orange revolutions and such in the Ukraine. I mean, Russia cannot possibly be happy with the United States of America at this point because they're completely surrounded by American client states. And to have an occupation of Iran is something that they definitely cannot have.
No.
Because at that point, they'll be completely surrounded by the United States of America.
What would be, if we do end up attacking Iran, which the Pentagon is against, the Army is against, but Dick Cheney is for.
Yes.
The administration seems to be for. Bush keeps pushing his talks in that direction.
Hillary Clinton pushes her talks in that direction.
Ooh, makes me angry. But what, worst case scenario, what's going to happen if we do attack Iran? I mean, where's it going to go?
I think the future can only hold for that. I mean, because then we have, I mean, they've got it set up, all these suicide squadrons at that point, because then we can see suicide bombings all over the world, I think, at that point, on a scale that we've never seen before. Because right now, Iran is not practicing any kind of, like, suicide bombings or anything else like that. They're not practicing any kind of outright terrorism.
We do know that they are providing weaponry that is entering into Iraq. We do know that's definitely happening. Like it or not, that's a fact that's happening right now. They're providing weaponry to the Shiites, yeah.
We have another problem with the PKK, because the PKK is a terrorist organization that's on our side for the Kurds that have been attacking Turkey, which is another ally of ours, which is absolutely outlandish. But again, it's that Roman divide and conquer system that Cheney is very good at. We're playing Turkey against the PKK, but that is a very big problem because Iran hates the Kurds, Turkey hates the Kurds, the Shiites hate the Kurds. The Sunnis hate the Kurds, and with northern Iraq being invaded by Turkey, with Iran supporting that, I mean, that's a huge war that we don't even want to get into, because at that point we have Turkey engaged in a war in Iraq, with Turkey being our de facto ally. I don't know what we do with that situation.
What was your take on the stuff about the Armenian genocide that happened recently, the coming out against Turkey?
I think it's a wonderful thing. It was a horrific genocide. It inspired the National Socialists, that particular genocide. The Germans got a lot of ideas from what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great album by Diamante Galas that just recently came out commemorating the Armenian genocide, by the way. The situation is it's going to push Turkey further and further from being our allies. And I think one of the good things that comes out of this is that Turkey may restrict our airspace, which could be a way of ending this war, at least on the northern front. If Turkey ceases to allow us to have troop movements going through their country and for allowing us to have at least legal flyovers, then that makes part of this war much more difficult. So this is a way that the Democrats could help push this war into something that's more and more difficult to actually wage.
Mm-hmm.
It could also push Turkey into a country that is going to want to invade another country like northern Iraq. without caring what the United States thinks about it. And I don't know what that does to us.
Neither do I, and I...
That's a massive army. I think they have something like 200,000 troops on that border. That's more than what, nearly more than what we actually have in Iraq alone right now.
Yeah. Well, we're here today waiting for phone calls to cover what's happening with the anti-war protest. If you want to participate, you could also give us a call at 213-252-0998, though I doubt we'll hear from anybody. Let's go back to some music just for a moment, okay? It's 12:58 here on Kill Radio.